This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Wednesday, January 30th, 2013. I'm Caleb Brown. Kim.com has not gone quietly in both launching a new product and marking the anniversary of the controversial seizure of his site Mega Upload. He's essentially begging the U.S. to revisit our copyright laws. Tim Lee, an adjunct scholar at the Cato Institute, evaluates the status of copyright today.
There's been a trend for the last 20 years or so of copyright law becoming more and more strict with more and more enforcement powers. And we had a big sort of watershed moment a year ago when the Internet protested against the Stop Online Piracy Act. And it looks like the momentum for additional enforcement measures has slowed down a little bit. But we still have a lot of laws on the books that I think are problematic. And the government has been ratcheting up the use of those powers. So the powers have been on the books for a few years, but the government's become more and more aggressive, I think, in the way it's been using them.
Now, the recording industry, I think, learned a valuable lesson in not going after preteen girls when it comes to, enforcing their own copyrights. How have industries altered the way they lobby the government, and how has the government responded to that pressure?
Yeah, so there's been a shift. If you go back a decade ago, or a little less than a decade ago, you would have seen this campaign where the recording industry was sort of directly trying to enforce its copyright, both against intermediaries that it thought were engaging in infringement and also end users. And as you said, that sort of turned out to be a PR disaster. And so what's happened more recently is that they've managed to sort of deputize the government or convince the government to do a lot of their enforcement for them. And so rather than a company like Napster or YouTube or one of these companies facing a civil lawsuit where they're fighting against another private party, they're now facing a criminal indictment where you have potential jail time, and there's other sorts of penalties available that wouldn't be available to private parties.
Now, there is sort of an international push for under treaty obligations that would essentially obligate other countries to vigorously enforce copyrights in the United States, right?
Yeah, that's right. So one of the long-standing strategies that they're still pursuing is to use trade negotiations as a vehicle for basically twisting the arms of other countries to adopt copyright laws that that U.S. content companies like. So there was a treaty called the Anti-Counterfeiting Trade Agreement that was actually signed by the U.S. and was supposed to be signed by Europe, and there was a big backlash there, sort of growing out of the SOPA protest that actually put a stop to that legislation. But there's a new free trade, quote-unquote, agreement called the Trans-Pacific Partnership that I think probably has some good free trade language in there, but also is rumored to have, it's a secret process, some copyright provisions that may not be so great.
Kim.com mm-hmm. is sort of an icon now of this fight over copyright. His site, Mega Upload, allowed people to store items, and to the extent that people are storing digital assets, sometimes those are the copyright of other people. How did the government deal with him? And, he's not a dumb guy. He's a really very erudite, smart person, has been able to articulate his position on this very well. How has the government dealt with him? What are the lessons people are learning about how governments are going after these people?
Yeah, so people disagree about sort of the legal status of Mega Upload. To hear Kim.com tell it, it's basically the next Dropbox. It's just a sort of neutral file sharing service. They did do certain things like paying people for the volume of downloads that you could construe as sort of encouraging copyright infringement. Ultimately, that's something that should be for the courts to decide. What the government did is, rather than the traditional strategy of having a civil lawsuit with another private party, the government did a commando-style SWAT team raid on his home in New Zealand a year ago, and froze all of his assets and shut down his business before he had any sort of due process, before he had a chance to make his side of the argument in trial. And his website, Mega Upload, is still is still down, and all the assets of the company were frozen, which essentially means the company's dead because if you don't have any money, you can't pay your employees or whatever, all without him having any sort of opportunity to give his side in the court or to get a ruling for the judge about whether or not he's broken the law.
Okay, so this is clearly in the United States, this is what, prior restraint?
Yeah, so that's one of the issues. I mean, so libertarians have always been skeptical about asset seizures in, for example, drug cases where the government will take, say, they find a bunch of money and say, we think this is drug money, and they'll take it. So those issues all apply to these kinds of website seizures. But then there's the additional issues that a website is a platform for speech. And traditionally, the courts have been very skeptical about restricting people's speech before they've had due process. And in this Mega Upload case and in several other cases, you've had that just hasn't been followed, where the government's shut down a website and then the burden of proof is sort of on the owner of the website to go to court and convince the court to give the property back.
Kim.com has launched a new site timed to be launched a year after the government raided his home.
Yes, down to the minute. So he's he's got a lot of chutzpah, I guess you could say. He launched the site exactly 1 year to the minute after the initial raid on his house. He actually hired some people to fly a helicopter that said FBI on it to over his compound to sort of dramatize what happened to him. And so his position is, I was running legal business. Now I'm running another legal business that's similar, although has some differences to the previous one. And he's currently still fighting extradition to the United States. And I think his plan is to just build another successful business and sort of dare the government to shut him down again. And I think there's been enough of a backlash against the first seizure that the government's probably going to be reluctant to do the same thing to him again. I think if that happened, it would sort of illustrate the kind of lawless nature of this, that if the government doesn't like you, they can just shut you down. And he's just going to push forward and hope he wins in court and also is able to rebuild the business.
Now, the issue with Kim.com, with services like Dropbox, with Google Drive or any other file sharing services, or just the ease with which people share files today, YouTube, and just advancements in technology that allow this kind of copyright infringement to occur, is just broadly at odds. That is to say, the ritual or the customs that have emerged out of this sharing of digital assets is just at odds with the laws.
Yeah, well, it depends, right? So, I mean, I think that there is a distinction between companies like Dropbox or YouTube that make a reasonable effort to comply with the spirit of copyright law, versus companies like Mega Upload that arguably didn't. And we do have, I think, a set of legal doctrines that do a reasonably good job of balancing those competing objectives. But the key part of that is that you need to have some due process. You need to have a judge hear the arguments about were you following the law or not, and get a ruling before these things are shut down. Because remember, YouTube, for example, faced somewhat similar charges in the early days of YouTube. A lot of the content on YouTube was infringing, and they did take it down, but there were allegations they maybe didn't do it very quickly to sort of build, you know, people wanted to find South Park clips or whatever. And so there was a lawsuit between Viacom and YouTube, and YouTube mostly won that lawsuit and was not shut down, and now it's a $1 billion company. You can imagine an alternate universe where these asset seizure powers had been in effect. Congress only gave them to the government in 2008, but if the government had these powers and they'd simply staged a commando raid on YouTube headquarters and shut the website down, maybe they still would have won their lawsuit, but A, they wouldn't have had any money to fight the lawsuit with, and B, probably some other video sharing site would have taken their place, and so it would have been kind of a symbolic victory because their business would have been destroyed even though they in fact were not breaking the law.
Right, but with respect to how companies like Disney treat their intellectual property versus how young people think about the same, deal with the same intellectual property. There are remixes, edits, people engage in this type of thing just for fun.
Right.
And it's much easier to do that now than it ever has been. And it seems to be begging for a pretty serious reform of our copyright laws.
Yeah, I certainly think there could be room for copyright. But actually, I do think that the doctrine of fair use leaves a significant amount of room for some of the kinds of remixings that you're talking about. I think, as I mentioned at the beginning of our conversation, Congress keeps changing the law to make it more expansive and increase the enforcement. I think had that not happened, we probably still would need some reform to reflect sort of changing social norms. But I think you wouldn't need very much reform. I think that the sort of common law process by which fair use doctrine and other doctrines are evolve would have taken care of a lot of that. And you wouldn't necessarily have needed a huge overhaul of copyright.
Tim Lee is an adjunct scholar at the Cato Institute. You can read more of his work at cato.org.